So based on the internet, I'm just assuming, Jimmy, that you are under 45 feet of snow and
just not quite.
Can't
Actually,
go anywhere.
The snow really was south of us. So we only got 2 or 3 inches on the very edge of the storm. When the storm feathers out, we were like right in that where like it's not solid blue. You could still see through the blue cloud of the radar. So we didn't get a lot. But the city got slammed, all the coast, right along the coast, from D.C. all the way up to Boston. Derek said Boston got hit really hard, and there was some video clips. But we have snow from that first snowfall that came about 3 or 4 weeks ago. It's still here. Nothing's because it's been so severely cold. Nothing's gone away. A couple of days, it seemed like you could see the gravel in the driveway because that's the thinnest part of the snow. But it's all covered with ice and snow again. Packed snow. In the backyard, every time I go to the chickens, I have to walk through. Remember we joked a few weeks ago about how I shoveled a path to the chicken coop, and I did. And it's like blown over, like Mount Everest. I watched a couple of deer walk through the yard, and they left a big trail because they were walking in each other's footsteps. An hour later, it was completely gone because the wind and the snow is so cold and like wispy and powdery. It's really annoying. I'm really, really looking forward to the end of March when things start to crack. But we didn't get that deep snowfall. But it says we're going to get snow again this coming weekend. So I don't know what that means. Who knows? But it's consistently cold. So that's really annoying.
I watched Casey Neistat's new video where he was like in the city and he did like an hourly.
Yeah.
And it was kind of underwhelming. Like I don't know. You know, I know videos happen like that, but it was interesting to watch a Casey video and the whole time go like,
You guys aren't New Yorkers, but watching it, I was impressed where he was. And he was in like very, very, very far away, different locations throughout that video. I was
really?
He must have spent half the day driving to go to that. I mean, you're all in Manhattan. It's 13 by 3 miles, but the inconvenience of driving all the way uptown, and especially on a day when the city shut down.
He puts effort in for the shots.
He really does. He's everywhere. He's all over the place, which makes his video much more colorful.
In New York, do you have to have a license to fly a drone?
I was wondering about that too.
Oh, no. All that's just stolen. That's all just... You're not allowed to fly a drone. No, I'm saying it's his stuff. So he steals the time. You're not allowed to fly a drone anywhere in the city, I'm sure.
Okay.
You know, license online. Only probably the NYPD are allowed to fly a drone. I'm sure they've laid that rule down by now. Because when the genie thing, remember when he did the genie thing with him and the dude, they drove around the city in the genie thing 10 years ago? I remember he got in trouble for that. He talked a little bit about it either on a podcast or somewhere. But as long as you don't get caught, you're not going to get in trouble.
Okay. Yes, you can fly a drone in New York City, but it's highly regulated and requires a special permit from the NYPD.
Yeah.
Surely he has that permit.
I'm sure. I mean, that's too much of a risk, right?
Yeah.
I don't think he
and
does.
I mean, for him to be able to get the shots that he want and the fact that he's like a multimillionaire, he probably has the permit.
What I was impressed with is that the drone worked in that weather. There was a drone
shot.
We actually
talked about that while watching it, yeah.
There was a drone shot along the coast in Rhode Island or somewhere up near Massachusetts, and these houses look like they were blowing over, but the drone was a steady shot. I'm like, they must have got about 30 seconds in the air with the batteries being used on that drone. I mean, they must be in better.
And a very large drone that can handle that.
Yeah.
Right.
It's the wind up there is insane.
I was trying to see if I could find how much the permit cost. I'm just curious. Anyway.
No, but we didn't get slammed. In a couple hours, you hear the Mike County is really good with the plows. You hear the plows scraping by all the time. So even if it's really, really snowy out and you go out, it's still fine. You're usually pretty good. I've been going to pottery class every Friday morning for the last several weeks. And
really?
Last Friday morning,
there's a topic.
I've been going to pottery class. I've finally taken instructions with a very, very skilled potter couple, and it's about 25 miles north of me. So last Friday I left here and it just started snowing, but they live higher up in the mountains. So as I was going up, it was getting more and more treacherous. And I was you just slow down and drive slower. And then after pottery class was over, all the roads were plowed and salted. So it's very rare up here that you get stuck. Our friend was going to visit last week and And he called us like, how are the roads? I'm like, they're fine. Because we got snow last Friday. It wasn't a big snowstorm. It was just a typical snowstorm. But it wasn't, it's not that bad.
Typical snowstorm. So the drone application is $150.
Mm. Oh.
So I'm not really that impressed with your shot, Casey. Sorry. Just kidding. Totally joking. I just thought it would be a bigger deal to be able to fly a drone in New York City. It feels like with that many people.
Like a safety.
Yeah.
When you watch that clip, all I was thinking to myself is, look at all those roofs this drone can get lost on, and he's flying over the roofs.
Like, oh, that's all the windows it could run into. Best videos is his drone recovery. Are you familiar with this one?
Yeah, I've seen it.
No.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Hmm. Yeah.
Well, David, what about you? I guess you didn't get any of that snow, did you?
None. We got a little dusting yesterday, but I think it was from a different weather pattern. So we are, I think we're getting above freezing. So there should be no snow on the ground in a couple of days, which I'm really happy about.
Nice.
We're actually in a drought here in Northwest Ohio. Something about the type of snow that we get is drier. I don't understand science, but we're actually in a drought that could affect farming season later on in the year.
Huh. So interesting. I know Florida is in a drought. We have family in Florida, and that's surprising because I feel like Florida is just always wet and humid and stuff. But
it rains every 20 minutes in Florida.
Yeah. Well, what have you been working on, David?
On Saturday, last day of the month, I have a video coming out where I took a cheap Amazon alarm clock, cost $17, and I patootified it, just gutted it to its pure guts, and made this. I tried to like make it really like industrial design Dieter Rams. I may have fallen a little short of Dieter Rams, one of the greatest designers of all time, but that was kind of the standard I was setting for myself. And it came out really good. I'm super happy with it. And then right at the end, my internal thoughts, not in the video, I was like, okay, this is really cool, but it doesn't scream art piece to me. I'm like, what could I do to make this give it a big wow factor? And so I think there might be a part two where I actually make it look like make a nightstand and make it look like it's melting into the nightstand, and then replace all the guts with like a Arduino clock where I can have it glitch out but still functional and make my own little wave file for the alarm sound and everything. So it might turn into a whole sculpture piece. So there might be a part two down the road. I did the whole YouTubery thing of like, hey, if you want to see me make a video of this melting it into a table, let me know. You know when the YouTubers say, if you want to see that video, let me know, even though they're going to make that video anyway.
I need some engagement on this video so I can justify the next one. So
please. But it was actually this particular alarm clock. It's like one of the cheapest ones on Amazon, $17. It was pretty easy. All the internals are very simple. So there's a lot that you can do with it. You can even make it more crazy if you're willing to cut some ribbon cables and extend some of the wires and everything. It's, I don't know. The recasing projects are always my favorite because it's like a complete transformation. It puts me in a place where it's hard to design up front because you don't know what the internals are going to look like. And the outcome is most of the time satisfying. I've done some recasing where I'm just not totally happy with it. I did a Nintendo about 3 years ago and I look at it now and I'm like, man, I could have done better. And maybe still will do better someday. Yeah. Yeah. Huh. It's, I use this burl piece on the front of the Nintendo and on camera, and when you're not up close to it, it doesn't look like burl. It just looks like cardboard. It's just not cool looking at all. Yeah. So that is what I'm working on. That comes out Saturday. Here's a little behind the scenes. If you see any videos on the last day of the month that are sponsored by Squarespace, that is people working up until the deadlines. I see it all the time in a couple other YouTubers. Like Peter McKinnon will probably put out a video on Saturday. another channel, 1000. I see him put out Squarespace videos on the last day of the month quite a bit. It's just the deal with long-term sponsorships. Yeah. You work up until the deadline.
That's funny. I have a couple of sponsors coming up, and they requested, I guess, the first half of the month. They didn't say why. And so I usually do two videos a month, and so one of them, you know, is always kind of closer to the front half of the month, obviously. But that's the first time I'd ever heard anybody specify a part of the month. And it wasn't like a hard thing. They were like, we would just prefer the 1st to the 15th, if you can. And so it's been kind of interesting to, like, adjust my schedule a little bit so that those two videos over those 2 months are in the first, you know, I don't know. It's just kind of a weird thing. Not really difficult, but I'd never heard that before. So
if I didn't have that hard deadline, I would have to make up a deadline, because I would just keep working on the thing until I got it absolutely perfect.
Yeah, have like two really a month.
You need a deadline.
You do.
Even if it's an obligation.
I mean, yeah, the deadline, even you have multiple videos a month. And so is the second one having to get worked on not enough of a deadline for the first one to finish for you?
What happens is, the way my brain works is, it's hard for me to go all in on a project up until we're getting really close to the deadline. So, if I'm doing two videos a month for Squarespace, I tell myself I should have a video out by the 15th or somewhere around there. But the first week of every month, I just feel this. I feel so much calmer because I'm not racing up against a deadline, usually, unless it was like a third sponsor for that month. And, I just take it easy, and I work on the design a little bit more, or I'm like, you know what? I'm going to just work on music today, you know? And then when I get closer to that deadline, that's like, oh, I got to push myself. And then by the end of the month, I'm like losing my brains because I'm trying to get something done.
Yeah. Well, Jimmy, what have you been working on?
Oh, this week started a little slow. I did the ice cleats this weekend, and that was a very spontaneous thing. That's something that's been kicking around in my notebook for months, and I just assumed that it was going to be a reel. So I started working on it Saturday morning, and I thought maybe this will kind of go into what we're going to talk about today, but I thought the process might be interesting. I knew the payoff would be kind of lackluster because I'm just going to be walking in the snow. But I started shooting. I was like, oh, let me make this a reel. And then when I look back, I had at least 15 minutes to tell the story. And then I tightened that 15 minutes up by shrinking a lot of the clips into speed and stuff. And then I had a full video. I was like, all right, whatever. These spontaneous videos will always do fairly okay. And that one in the mailbox, which was a much more involved. But the mailbox, too, was like, I thought about it at the end of the week. That I never even wrote in my notebook. That was just something that came up out of nowhere. And I made it. So these more spontaneous videos for me have become more fun. Like, even I have to go away Saturday for the day, and I'm thinking, can I do a video Thursday and Friday and get it ready for Sunday morning? Maybe. I don't know. Let's see what comes up. At the moment, I don't have an idea, but that could change. I did make this week, and I could show you. I made, for my office, I made these boxes out of scrap MDF that were laying around. I just want a maker case. I made, they're basically like business. What do they call those document boxes?
You know, like a banker box?
Yeah, banker box. Yeah, they're the same size as a banker box. And that's usually how I sort my files and my bills and just the scrap in my office. And I would grab an Amazon box and just fill it. Believe it or not, it's the most convenient thing, just grab an Amazon box, an empty Amazon box, and then that becomes my bill box for the year. So I put 24, 25, and now empty 26, my business files. And I'll probably make more because I broke the file up into various pieces so that it, actually, this is an interesting tip. I'm going to do my CNC tips video, probably start working on it. Actually, I should have it done this week. So that's really the video I'm going to do, but that'll only be on Patreon until I'm late to release it. But my CNC tips video, if you CNC through your image into the table and you have to make a lot of, for instance, boxes, you could then put scrap over the image of, say, the side, and then another piece of scrap over the image of the bottoms. And so that's what I was doing yesterday by just looking on the wall for various pieces of MDF that would fit over these spaces on the CNC table. And I knew if I screwed them right there, I run the machine. Even if I run the whole file, it's only going to cut that piece because that's the only piece I need right now. So I just hit start. It takes 15 minutes to run the whole file, but only 3 of those minutes is going to cut what I want. But I just walk away, come back, and then it's cut. So I was playing around with that yesterday. And I also made, I made the banker boxes yesterday. No video, won't even, but I did make a reel for the record album box. Did you guys see the record album box? It was a reel I did Monday.
No.
I just shot it quickly. We have records everywhere and they keep growing. I'll go to my mother's house and pinch like 10, 12 inches of records off of the rack. I got probably about 30 feet of records in my house. So I go to my mother's house and I just go through and I grab, you know, all the old Led Zeppelin and all the stuff. I bought all these albums brand new and I'll bring them up to the house and they just like lean on the wall. And so I made these boxes at 5 inches, 13 by 13 by 5 inch inside diameter. And they take 5 inches of records or 4 inches of records. And so you could break up your records into categories and then pull the whole box up and go through it or leave it down there. But it keeps the records from flopping all over the place. Hmm. And with a big pile of records and 5 cats in the kitchen becomes a scratching post. So the corners of all my good records are getting.
Oh, yeah.
So now that they're in the boxes, the cats aren't going to use them as a scratching pile. So that was quick. Those are just, I'm sorry, I got a cough. Just a quick maker case videos. You go on maker case and you set your thickness, length, width, and height. And then it spits out a SVG file and then you bring it to Vectrix and then you cut out your stuff. So
going back to the ice clades, I found that video pretty interesting. So one of my favorite parts of the video is you telling people to calm down in the video.
Oh yeah, when I walked on the floor.
When you're walking on the floor. I love that. But I'm reading the comments on there and there was a few people that said something about hardening the steel. Is that something that needed to be done?
I don't think so.
I didn't think so either.
With ice? Why would you need hardened steel for ice?
Well, people talk about, remember I said last week in the clip went semi-viral, a lot of people reposted it, of waiting to be perfect to get things done. Everything has to be perfect. That's the kind of thing that would keep somebody from being like, well, don't they have to be hardened? Or like when I made my mailbox, I covered the mailbox with a piece of galvanized steel and I put about 10 tack welds in the galvanized steel. And there was several comments like, well, I thought you can't weld galvanized steel because it's poisonous. It's like, yeah, if I welded it directly under my nose and inhaled while I was welding, I probably would get a burnt nostril, but it's not that big of a deal. So these little things that hold people up from going forward, they're like, well, I can't make ice. I'm not saying somebody would, but I can't make ice cleats because I don't know how to harden mild steel. So I'm not going to do it. These are like little stupid things that you just make it anyway. See if it does need to be hardened. And if you're most likely going to realize it doesn't need to be hardened. Just follow through with it because the first round is going to be practice anyway, most of the time. That's what I was saying in that clip. But what I did see the few people saying doesn't have to be hardened. I'm like, I hate to order lunch with you. It's going to be like, when was the chicken made? You know, like it's going to be those type of people. It doesn't. If I'm standing on ice or if I'm standing on a piece of bent metal, which is going to be the one that's going to keep me from slipping?
Yeah, exactly. So. That whole thing right there, that conversation that you just went through, is one of my biggest frustrations with YouTube as a platform. I don't know of a way to make it better, so I'm not complaining about YouTube not doing this. It's just when you creatively do something and you put it out, if you're standing in a room with people and you put a thing out and somebody goes, well, what about X? Then you can reply to that person, well, this is what I would do about X. And everybody standing around you also hears that question. They hear your explanation and it's a conversation, right? And that's how conversations work. That's awesome. I love doing that. I love people challenging things locally and then I can respond to it. And that's how you get to understanding. YouTube is terrible for that because all of the conversations become these little these little cracks that just go off. Like somebody asks a question, but nobody else hears the question. And so if you answer it, you're not answering it to the forum. You're answering it to that person, regardless of what their intention for the question was. And then you have another person over here that asks a similar, the same question, a different question.
The comment did come up a few times.
And it's just like, it's this splintered thing. And it's so weird. I don't know. That's one of the things that really frustrates me. I think YouTube did have, at one point, they had a video response feature. This is way back, where you could put a video up and then you could make a video response to that that people could watch. And so you could follow up on something and be like, hey, you know, this is, somebody asked me this. This is the answer. Or I did this wrong and now this is
what
how
Instagram
I would have done
stories
it.
Is for.
Yeah, but like there's not 100% overlap between those people, you know, on the two different platforms. But anyway, that's one of the frustrating things because I think it, at least for me, that messed up version of a conversation forces me, not doesn't force, it causes me to try to pre-address conversations in the video as I'm thinking through something, and I'm never going to get it all, obviously. But it also sounds like I'm hedging all my decisions. You know what I mean? When you say like, okay, so today we're going to make this pencil. And I wanted to point out that not all pencils are like this, obviously, that not everybody wants to have this kind of pencil. You know what I mean? So you end up kind of like hedging to try to get ahead of some of those conversational.
You know, that's, this is my,
holes,
my theory is.
It's frustrating.
You just, I sometimes just don't want to mansplain.
Well, that too. Yeah.
They'll have to figure it out. It's like if somebody says, doesn't it need to be hard metal? I didn't answer them, but my answer would just be no. Doesn't need to be hard metal. No.
Yeah.
I don't need to explain it. I don't need to mansplain. And a lot of times people ask simple questions and I just hard it because if they really want to know, they'll figure it out. I don't need to sit there and give them the answer to like, where do I get metal? Or isn't the elastic going to give up? And I just, isn't the elastic going to come loose? And I just give it a hard. Maybe, but you know what? I know somebody that knows how to make ice cleats. I can ask myself to fix it. That's why I often joke. I say, I make that joke a lot. I'm like, don't worry if it breaks because I know somebody that knows how to fix stuff. You watch me create something literally from scratch, you're like, what about that weld? That weld's not going to hold. And I give it a heart. There's no reason to mansplain because it's one of those things where, like, for instance, Ryan and I have been working together even this week. I was teaching him how to use the Onefinity last night. And I trust him enough to know that he'll figure it out. And he'll also even go to YouTube. He's really good like that. There are some people in my world that want to learn the CNC machine and just can't get through to it. Ryan, he'll be like, just show me the screen. And I give him a quick tutorial of the screen. And he's like, I got it. And I don't need to mansplain. I could leave him alone. And last night at 2 or 3 in the morning, he sent me an image of what he was working on. But I left him alone at midnight, fiddling with the machine. He never used it. By 2 hours later, he was sending me finished product. I knew he would get it. And there are a lot of times where you got to ask yourself, if I leave the room, this is going to work out whether I'm here or not. And it's the same thing with a lot of comments. It's like, I don't have to answer that question. If this person wants to know how to do that, they'll figure it out. So I try never to mansplain in the comments. And even if at the very least somebody's like, oh, that's cool material, where'd you get that? I'm like, you know what? It's funny. I found it on eBay because they're hard to find. You know, that's a good answer, basically saying there is no good lead for that. You have to dig for it. Or, you know what? Michael sells that. I never knew it would be there. You know, just little bits of information like that are okay to drop, little pearls like that, versus having to try and explain to somebody the whole thing.
I think another.
I'm not extremely interactive in the comments, but I am. And by the way, you know, we talked about this. The comment section is our home. You're invited into our home. So if you're going to be rude in the comments and you're going to complain about getting deleted, you're going to get deleted. Because if you come and whine and you don't like certain things about a video, you're going to get deleted. If you come rude, if you come in there, if you read my comments, when the comments come at me and they're somewhat gentle and they're nice, I leave them. But if you come in rude or if you demand that I believe what you believe, you're going to get deleted. And that's it. Simple like that. And don't go running around going, you deleted my comments. You're anti-free speech. In my living room, I'm anti-free speech when you don't agree with me or if you're rude to me. That's it. You don't have to necessarily agree with me, but if you're rude to me, I'm anti-rude speech.
Dilly. There you go. There you go.
What I was going to say as I'm going to go was, and I don't know how we got to talking about comments. That was not the intention. But I think one of the other problems with the conversation mechanism on YouTube is that there's no context, right? You don't have the expression around somebody. When somebody asks, well, shouldn't those be hardened? You don't know if they're saying that like, shouldn't those be hardened? Or if they're like, wait, does that matter or not? Like, I don't get the,
And, you know, and annotations were taken away, so we can't go back to the video and add annotations anymore.
Yeah. So it's frustrating from that perspective for me because it makes it difficult for us to have good conversations when we don't know exactly like how, why it's splintered. You know, there's, it's tough. Anyway. Yeah. Cool. Well, I have been working on, oh, wait, before we do that, I want to hear about the pottery class.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, a few years ago, a fan, and I don't want to say his name, but a fan reached out to me and said, hey, you've been talking about getting into pottery, and he listens. And he said, you should go visit my mom and dad. They're only about 20 miles from you. And about 3 years ago, we did. Me and Rob went and visited David and Judy. They make pottery for years. He's older gentleman, older couple, and very experienced, really hands-on. He's like always covered with clay. His studio is messy in a good way. He's constantly doing stuff, and he's very, very physical with his work. It's like all hands-on. He's like throwing glaze, and it's my type of studio. And we visited, and I said there and then, I'll take classes with you, or I'll do a video. We'll do a video together. And it never formulated, but I did introduce them to Maker Camp. So they've been coming to Maker Camp for 2 years, and they really have a fun time at Maker Camp. So I did get to keep up with them at Maker Camp. And then Rachel really started getting into their pottery, and she started buying a lot of their stuff from Maker Camp and then even just going to the studio. And for Christmas, Rachel made arrangements with them for me to take pottery classes. That was my Christmas gift from Rachel. So tomorrow will be my fourth week in a row going. And that's why I put up a Instagram clip of me saying Sid Smith Pottery. That's the name of the Instagram, teaching me the basics. And David's been teaching me how to throw on the wheel and basics about glaze and all these things that I'm experimenting with, that I did experiment with on my own in the very beginning, three, four years ago. But I never really, I find myself bumping my head against the wall, needing more information that I can't simply find. But hanging out with David, just asking a simple question, what about XYZ? What is the type of this for the cone? And then you get the simple answer. And then being in the environment, being with somebody, I'm not saying I'm his apprentice, but I feel like I'm apprenticing under someone that's got 40 years of experience. And just the subtlety that transfers, the subtle information that transfers is unknown until you're alone. And then all of a sudden you realize you know what you're doing. And it's been really, really enlightening. And I'm really playing around with, I went and broke out I got about 50 pounds of clay in various boxes. I broke it out and I've been experimenting. Last night I was experimenting with laser techniques and I remade their stamp. So on my Patreon, I showed my patrons how to remake a stamp in clay. And one of my patrons realized I spelled something wrong. So thank you. I had to go back and remake the stamp, fix the mistake. The stamp was for them based on their logo, but they gave me this logo that was so deteriorated. I drew over it in Illustrator and I misspelled it because I thought an E was an F and an F was an E or whatever. But it's been great. It's been great. And tomorrow I'll probably go and see some of the stuff that we glazed last week. That'll probably be done and learning how to throw tall cylinders, which is obviously all these skills required. And in the meantime, David has an old pottery wheel. He's like, once it's uncovered with ice, he's like, you take it and you fix it. He goes, I know you could fix it. So I'm going to take that from him. But in the meantime, I've been collecting bits and pieces to make my own pottery wheel in a video. So I've been grabbing online motors and gears and pulleys and stuff. It's not that complicated, but I've been acquiring some of the stuff that I need. So I will eventually do a build where I make a pottery wheel.
You can check out my video.
Did you make a pottery wheel?
I did.
Oh, you did? I want to see that. How long ago was that?
4 or 5 years ago, maybe.
Wow, I missed that one. Send that to me. I want to see it.
Yeah. It worked out pretty well, actually. I mean, there's definitely stuff in there that, you know, could be improved, but it works and we still have it. We don't use it, but we do have it.
Have you done pottery? I know your wife does, but are you doing pottery with her?
No, I mean, I've done it once with her, like when she was kind of, she was taking lessons from somebody a while ago and I went with her one time, just got to try it. It was a lot of fun, but it's not something I ever really pursued.
Yeah. Well, what I want to do is, and I finally formed a cohesive idea. I've been wanting to make, and by the way, the graveyard house has been completely on hold because it's been sub-zero weather here. It's impossible to work in the weather. And I have an architect doing full plans for the house. So I paid an architect, a proper architect that knows all the codes in the county and everything. And he's an old friend. And I enlisted him. I was like, hey, any interest in this? He goes, I've been waiting for you to ask me. And so he's excited about the project. So Mike is drafting up full plans for the house. We discussed some of the creative ideas that I want for the rooms because now the bones are basically done. It's time to do the interior and the windows and stuff. And so Mike's working on that. So while he was working on that, I got a crystal. I'm going to make a series of tiles, whether they get put in the bathroom or somewhere in the kitchen, but I'm going to make tiles and the tiles are going to have graven images, the tops of the colonial tombstones, which this graveyard has several of. So I'll take some of the images out of the graveyard right there. But Rachel got me this great book called Graven Images, where it's all Massachusetts, New England colonial gravestone heads. Oh, wow. And I'm going to simplify a lot of those drawings and then put them in tiles. So I'm going to make.
Yes, all, that's so cool.
It's going to be cool. So I'm really, it's like when the idea finally formed, it seems so simple now that I say it, but when I'm thinking, I want to make tiles for the graveyard house, I want to make cobalt blue and black, and but how am I going to tie it into what the environment is and what the whole theme of the house is? And so I'm going to do those graven images tiles. So I might make 10 different ones, but I'll make 20 of each. So they'll be mixed up and matched wherever they end up. And there'll be a subtle,
so much.
Either a CNC etched into dry clay, which I've seen people do, or a laser etched into dry clay, or just like a press. I tend to like that mushiness. So I might make a stamp and then press it in. And then when the glaze goes over it, like the sharp edges are a little bit different color. Then, so I'm going to really start getting into that. I'm excited to play with that.
Huh.
So
that's interesting. Yeah. The press would be, so when you do, maybe you've never done this before, but when you do a press like that into clay, are the corners, the leading corners sharp? No, not the leading corners.
You mean the corners of the tile itself?
So the top layer of the tile. Uh-huh. Right. So if you were to press in like the letter J and you press it down into it, do you want the top face of the tile to be sharp to where it could chip off and hold glaze differently? Or do you want that surface kind of rounded over down into it?
Well, that's what I got to experiment with. I could do like the way I did the book stamp. If you guys saw that video a couple weeks ago, I made one where the whole background pushes down and the image stays forward because that was what was engraved in the die. Or the actual image gets pushed in and the whole background comes forward and the image gets pushed down. So I could do both and I'll probably experiment with both. And I've been looking for a rolling mill for the clay. I looked around and I was like, you know what? All it is a heavy steel roller. I went to the shop and I got a piece of scrap steel. It's three inch piece of solid steel. That's about 20 inches long. It weighs about 60, 70 pounds. And I got two steel rods and I was able to roller mill right there on my table. So I don't need to buy a roller mill because most
potters like a slab roller?
Yeah, yeah. So most potters wouldn't have a 60 pound steel rod.
Most people.
Yeah. So that's another thing why I'm approaching pottery in a different way. I'm thinking to myself, what do they call that creative advantage? There's a word for it. What can I bring to pottery in my environment that most potters wouldn't do? Not because it's a game.
Competitive advantage.
Yeah. What's my competitive advantage? Not that there's so many talented potters and now they keep getting fed to me and I'm seeing the most insane technologically advanced things that I never would be able to do. But what is my own personal advantage being in the environment of a machine shop, a wood shop, doing this, 3D printing, laser cutting, laser CNC mill. How can I utilize all of my togetherness?
I mean, My first thought is like, how can I bring a piece of pottery into what I normally do? Like, whether it's like just a mailbox or something, like it's just a small piece, but other people with a machine shop can't do this because they don't have this tool in their shed.
Yeah. So last night I've been looking, so I keep getting all this stuff fed to me, and I keep getting these mosaics fed to me. These guys doing these beautiful mosaics in churches with little crunch pieces of glass. So last night I was like, I want to mimic that. So I did this at the end of the day. So I CNC'd, or rather I laser etched a bunch of little squares into a piece of MDF, and then I pressed clay into it to see what that would look like if it dries. I'll send you guys a picture. And it's just simply experimenting. And that's when I played around with the roller mill, and let's see. So I'll send you guys some graven images I collected.
That's cool.
And here.
And the reason I was asking about...
Yeah.
Go ahead. Well, the reason I was asking about the pressing the thing in is because the whole die idea has been, that's what I've been doing with the metal die project.
Yeah.
And I finished that video up and was able to get exactly what I wanted out of the thing. And it was a simple piece. It's basically a triangle with two sides folded up at different angles. So one's a 90 and one's like a 70 or 60 or something. I don't remember. And the third side doesn't have a flange like that coming up from it. It's just loose. And this fits into a corner of the car. So the two flanged sides get welded to create a bracket in between two pieces of metal, right? That's the point of it. It's a really simple piece. And so I thought that would be a good, you know, a good simple way to try making a metal die with a 3D printer. And the first thing I did, I found several problems with it. Just the geometry of getting two pieces that fit together with something else in between them, with material in between them. They had to be tight, but not too tight. And then all of the edges, you know, they have to be square, but they can't actually be square because then they can't pass by each other effectively. And all this little stuff that I learned along the way. And I ended up with the piece that I wanted. And I got it working, you know, after a couple of tries. So I got to the end of the video shooting it, and like there wasn't much to look at. Even through the process, it was a lot of thinking, modeling, some printing, took pieces off the printer, and I'm like, look, here's these pieces, let's go try it with this piece of metal, try it, didn't quite work, let's go back and adjust the model and print the thing again, and then try it again. There just wasn't much to look at. And then when you got to the end of it, the final piece is not an impressive thing to look at. It does its job. It's not supposed to be visually impressive. But all that to say, I got to the end of the video and I was like, this was not really a video. It was more of like a radio show, you know, like me describing what I did without a whole lot to show for it. And so I've been kind of wrestling with that for the last couple of days. It's not a big deal. It's just a video. I can move on to the next one. But ideas like that, that take a lot of thought, that take intangible skill and even artistry. Like, what do you do with taking something that's not very visual and making a video, which is 100% visual? How do you take those ideas and move them into that media, I guess?
Well, one thing that comes to mind while you're saying that is a trend, and maybe it's just what I've been being fed and it's not a trend. I've been noticing a lot of guys doing voiceovers and doing a video collage over the voiceover. And they're finding images that they don't create. They're images that they find. And a good example, I've talked about Elephant Graveyard, has become very popular. He's a big critic of Joe Rogan and a few other guys. So he's funny in that way, where he criticizes somebody's political comedic stance. But he's not filming anything. He's just collaging stuff. So he does these long conversations about whatever it is his point of view is. In the whole entire time, the images that you're being fed are nothing that he's ever shot. So I'm not saying you need to obviously take the same political stance he's taking, but if you're talking about these things, you could integrate images of industry or even images that you create that aren't necessarily tied directly to that project. So you're saying, you know, when I'm thinking, and then like you show a guy like thinking, you know, that's a real explicit version of that, but you know, when you're thinking, and it could show you skiing or whatever, you know, I know you're a physical guy, running, you know, when I'm thinking and then you're running. So like all these outside things that you wouldn't expect, but are loosely tied to whatever the voice is. And you create a visually stimulating blender of images on top of what you're saying. And because you create images, you probably tend to create your own images, but
yeah.
Film things that you do that nobody would see, that would still be interesting in the context of what you're talking about. Like running, you know, like we see Casey Neistat running all the time. You talk about, no one's ever seen you run. Has anybody ever seen you run? Do you actually really run?
No, I'm sure but somebody's seen me run. I don't know.
But the idea of running, I'm sure, is very cathartic for you. And it's probably where a lot of your problems are solved. I know when I'm on the bike, it's the same thing. So integrate some more of those images that wouldn't necessarily be tied directly to the project, like watching the 3D printer. Or, you know, like you're going to forge this thing. And like, imagine if you're 3D printing, but instead you show like the giant forge that like the Air Force has to like make the biggest metal parts in America, like stamp that, you know, like it's obviously an exaggeration, but, and then you know, you stamp and then you have a 3D printed piece and people are like, that really wasn't forged.
That would be I don't know. Like even the idea of doing a voiceover video. At this point, I used to do that. That's how all of my first
You could integrate it. You could do some parts and some parts.
Yeah, I think now I feel like I would have to kind of plan for that. Maybe not, but
that's,
you know,
this is.
Go ahead.
My suggestion is it's hard to do it on a video that you've already shot, but if you know, this is going to be hard to explain. I've been on this kick over the last year or so. The audiobooks that I choose to listen to are all kind of like story based, how story works in film and documentaries and things like that. And I'm trying to bring that into what I do. And if you outline the video just a little, if you know the video is not going to be very visual, outline the video beforehand and kind of say like, there's this thing that you want. And maybe you show off the outcome at the very intro of the video. And there's a journey in how we got from here to here. This is the interesting part. And talking head is okay. I think if you're talking, I don't like voiceover because unless it's a tutorial, unless you're like step by step. But if it's I like watching this dude or this person because I like how they approach things, I think talking to the camera throughout the process, like you need to figure out at the beginning, like, here's what could go wrong. Here's what I want to go right. And then let the story kind of evolve over time. We have this thing that we've been trying lately. We never manufacture drama ever. It's like, that's a complete no-no with what we do, but we do kind of think like, you know, this particular step could go wrong, or this is where the problems might happen. Let's see if we can kind of make sure that part of the video is in like the right at like the second third. So we're kind of working up to there, and then there doesn't even need to be drama. It could just be like, this didn't meet my standards. And then you're like on this hero's journey. Okay. Like, what do I got to do to make this meet my standards? Because yeah, I got it working, but that's not the outcome that I really want. I want to be able to do this so I can do all these other things in the future. And like if you can just piece out the story beforehand, you can kind of shoot with that in mind, and talking head is totally okay. Because when I'm interested in the process, I want to see that person talk to me on camera. And, I lost my, there was one more thought that I wanted to get in there. Silly brain. I lost what I was going, but yeah, just trying to piece it. Oh, the biggest thing in story is like the best advice for any story is, instead of like, this happened and then this happened and then this happened, try to frame it where like, this happened. Because this happened, we had to do this. So instead of and, think of therefore, and try, and that pushes the story along and keeps the user engaged because there's like, oh, that affected this. Now this is affecting this. And
yeah,
it just helps the story, even if it's mostly talking head and there's not a lot of visuals.
Yeah, that's a good set of things to go by. It is tough beauty shot, after the fact.
Your beauty shot, it might not be so exciting. You got to put your puppy in it, of course. Use that puppy as much as you can. I know you used them in the last video, but use them as much as you can.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to, because a lot of people were like, we need more boon breaks on every video from now on, please.
Of course.
Well, and also, that plays on emotion, because we all love cute things. Or if you're a normal human being, you love cute things. And like, if you look at Smarter Every Day, like, he's so excited about what he's learning, or he's so excited about the outcome that he did. He goes to the Kodak factory and he got the, like, he's like, look at this. This is so cool. Like, try to get that emotion on camera. One big change that we've made while filming is, in the past, like with previous camera people and up until recently with my brother, is like, I would get really frustrated when something goes wrong, glue up goes wrong or something breaks, and I can't have a camera in my face. I would just be like, Daniel, shut down. I need a moment to rethink. And I've told Jefferson, the new guy, I'm like, okay, I am going to be, there's going to be times things don't work out. I'm going to be upset and I don't want to be filmed. Your job is to film me anyway, because that is, we're looking for real human moments. So in the past, I would just say, shut the camera down. Now I'm like, we got to get that. Like, we were, I had one little piece of 1/8 inch walnut that I was cutting on the laser. Cut it on the laser, and I sent the wrong file to the laser. So I ruined my last piece of walnut. Oh. And I was like, this is not going in the video. Shut down. And he's like, no, you told me to film when there's a human moment. This is a human moment. And I was like, you're 100% right. And yeah, I'm super upset. And this sucks, you know?
Yeah, that's smart, because you don't have to use it if it doesn't work with the edit. But if you don't have it, then.
And it's really uncomfortable for me to be frustrated with a camera on, because it feels, part of it feels fake. I'm like, I don't want to show my emotion on camera. I'm the guy that doesn't like opening Christmas presents in front of other people. I hate opening gifts in front of other people because everybody's looking for my reaction. But uncomfortableness is, I think, people want to see that. People want to see real human moments. So just try to make it more human.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, it's weird. I mean, this particular video didn't go 100% like I wanted it to, but it also didn't really go off the rails. And so there was no like, oh no, my 3D printer exploded. Right. What do I do with, you know, it was no like real reaction worthy thing. It was like, oh, that was close. Not quite. So let's adjust, you know. And I'm the same
way.
That's
the moment right there. That's the villain right there. You don't have to, you don't have to manufacture drama, but you could, like, it was close. It didn't meet my standards. And this is why. And make that a more prominent moment in the video on why it was close and not the final version. Just focus on that a little bit more.
Yeah. That's a good point. Cause I'm like you. I don't want to like falsify drama. I don't want to create a thing just for like a video up and down, you know. So I tend to avoid things that would seem like I'm overreacting. I also have just calmed it down a whole lot in this part of my life, where I just don't react as much as I used to. I think that's maturity. So, you know, but okay, well, that's good stuff, man. Thank you for that insight. Jimmy, do you have any other thoughts on it? Maybe less about like, you know, video, but just if you're trying to create something creatively that ends up not being as, it still does its job, it still got to the end goal, but it's not visual in that it's not like visual art. Do you have any experience with just that thing and being satisfied with the output and its performance, even if it's not visually performant?
Another approach would be to start with it being done, so people expect where it's going to go, versus being like,
I'm always afraid of that. I'm always afraid of that because
show people the beginning. I experiment with that sometimes. I'll do a couple of clips of it done in the very beginning. People always like that, and I got to remember to do that more. But especially if it's going to be lackluster, ta-da! But it really suits the technical need versus a visually exciting need. If you show it in the beginning and show an explanation, and then I wish I had the ability to do a good 3D model. Imagine doing a fly through of a 3D model of the car, and then you land where it's supposed to be. You know, that also helps too, that eye candy. But show it in the beginning and then explain how you got there. And so this video, come with me on a ride. Come with me on a journey. It's the beginning of the Mighty Boosh. Come with me on a journey through space and time. And you get to that result. And that is the ride. The ride is the excitement. Exciting part. The ride is the experience. So when you get to the end, you go, well, that's it. That's all I have for today. You saw it already done. And this is it in place. This is how I put it in place. And have a wonderful life. Be nice in the comments.
People like the process. They really do.
Yeah, I think I just, you know, YouTube is so fickle.
The final thing, which might not be like this amazing thing to look at, unless you need that to be amazing for the thumbnail, you've already got people watching the video. And so let them enjoy the process, even if the outcome is just, I made this thing, you know? Sometimes that final thing needs to be amazing looking for the thumbnail. But if it doesn't need to be that amazing, just enjoy the process and let other people enjoy the process with you.
Here, okay, we got like a few minutes, but here's another topic that's tangential. So over the last couple of years, we've been actively changing titles and thumbnails to be less concrete and more, not clickbaity. That's not the intention. The intention is to be an idea, right? Like, I tried this thing, but it didn't work. That's the idea. Not, I tried to make a bookcase and it exploded, right? So I've tried to make them more general to be able to hook people without being clickbaity. And it's not like I'm falsifying what's in it. I'm just trying to make it more general. And even the thumbnail, I try not to show off the final result, because typically in my experience, if I see a finished item in a thumbnail, I know immediately whether it's interesting or not to me to like pursue. So I feel like I'm going to lose viewers on a video if I show them the final result in the thumbnail. So those are active decisions on our part. Recently, in the last few videos, I've gotten one or two comments, not a lot, but a couple that I've seen that are like, why do you do titles and thumbnails like that? Why don't you just say what it is specifically? There's always going to be people that like, you know, more direct, less direct. I get that. I had this call with a YouTube channel manager person. Every 6 months or so, they assign me a new person that talks to me and doesn't really do anything helpful. They just talk about YouTube shopping and whatever. This time I asked the
guy.
Jimmy,
you're muted.
Yeah, you're muted, Jimmy. I can see your mouth moving, but.
I was going to say, they have zero experience in doing anything we've been doing for 15 years, and they try and give you advice.
Yeah. And all they're really doing is
use this feature.
Yeah. They're trying to get you to use YouTube features. Like, don't forget about live. Don't forget about, you know, it's like, okay, cool. Thanks. Anyway, so I asked this guy in the first meeting, I was like, the last time I talked to one of these people like you, who's doing his job, I get it, but it was not helpful at all because I don't do live videos and I don't really care about shopping and putting makeup advertisements, you know, like in the top corner. And so I was like, if I'm going to spend my time and your time together on a monthly basis, I would like something concrete that I can actually, I need you to research my content and give me something I can improve. Right. So
they
one of the things
moved
that he
to another job by the end of the phone call, that's the problem.
Well, so he read this thing back to me that was obviously like a generated summary of my channel. Because, yeah, I could see him reading it on the screen. He wasn't trying to hide it or anything. But He was reading back this feedback. One of the things it said was, viewers are asking about, I can't remember how he said it, but basically viewers are asking about why your titles are not more direct to the content. Now, I've only seen this comment like a couple of times in the last few videos. Now, it's possible that I haven't seen them all because I don't always read every comment. But I was really surprised that that came up in the summary as like big enough, important enough for me to like, oh, well, maybe we are doing something wrong. So for this last video with doing the siding, we did titles and thumbnails. You can do 3 at a time, and we're testing them, right? And so they were all kind of general, non-specific about siding. It was just about like the last stage of this thing, whatever. And then it picked one of those titles and thumbnails, made it the final thing. And I went back and said, hey, why don't we go ahead and do another test and make 2 of these more direct, like about siding, about putting up siding as the title. And so then we ran this other test, and the original general title and thumbnail won out twice. This is 2 separate tests. It did better than the really direct things. So that put us like in a, I was just really confused, because when it comes to that kind of feedback, somebody's asking for more direct titles and thumbnails, it sounds to me like maybe people are overwhelmed with the general clickbait driven, I just need your attention kind of thing that we're all kind of forced to do. And maybe people are overwhelmed with that and they want a more direct, this video is about this action or about this result or about
that's
this.
That's usually, I always tend to go that way.
But then when I test that, I tested that against just one video, I tested that against the audience and it lost. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know what to do about that. And then when you take that conversation and I don't know what to do about it, and then you apply it to a video like the dive video that's coming up where I don't have a beautiful final result that I want to show off, and I want to make like, hey, this, I made this cool thingy with the thingy.
Just do a still of it next to the puppy.
It's just a weird, I don't know. There's no answer to any of this stuff, but you know, I think a lot of people who don't make YouTube videos are confused as to why we choose to do certain things with titles and thumbnails and process and, you know, exposition and all this stuff. And that whole big crazy scenario that I just went through is one of the reasons that it's difficult for the viewer to understand what we're doing, because we're trying to we're trying to understand all of those different overlapping things on a weekly or biweekly or monthly basis. You know what I mean? We mm-hmm. have to like go through this whole process. Anyway, all that to say, I'm not trying to complain about it. I'm just confused and I don't know how to do it better. And I really wish I did, because I think that title thumbnail thing is really the gateway to whether your effort is well received, you know, and that's a difficult gateway to try to figure out how to build.
If you guys had this experience with the A/B testing, did you A/B test the titles and the thumbnail? And I swear to God, every single time I check the test results, it's 33.1. 33.2.
Yeah. Mine is almost always that way. Yeah.
It's always, you could literally have a picture of a hockey puck, a screwdriver, and the project, and they'll all be 33%. So I don't do it anymore. It doesn't seem to matter.
A video that I did a couple of years. So just recently, I made a bunch of, not recently, a couple of years ago, I made a bunch of skateboards, and I still have a couple of those left, up in the attic. And Jefferson's son is a skateboarder. And I was like, oh, let me go grab one. I'll give one of the ones I made to him. He's like, oh man, he's going to love this. He's like, I couldn't find the video on this. And I was like, oh yeah, because the video is titled My New Favorite Clamp, which is a hand vacuum pump. And the video did very well because the video is titled My New Favorite Clamp, which is a vacuum pump. And there's not a skateboard in the thumbnail and title because that wouldn't be watched because that group of people is so narrow. And when you create those little curiosity gaps, they work. It's like, you have to click on it. You have to know that thing. But yeah, I am the last person you'll ever want to discuss thumbnails and titles because packaging is so hard for me.
Yeah, it really is.
I enjoy the game, but I also hate the game, and it's all part of the game, and that's not going to change anytime soon. You're trying to sell yourself, and the pool of other creators is huge now, especially in our space. And so, you know, they say don't compare yourself to other people, but this is my business. I have to compare myself to other people.
Yeah. Which is, it's strange. It's strange that I chose this as a career because I really hate convincing other people to like me. Like, and that's what it feels like we're doing. You know what I mean? It feels like not like me, but like,
yeah,
I don't want to have to convince, and I don't feel that I need to generally convince somebody to like something that I've done or to pay attention to me. That's just not who I am personally. And so the fact that I have to willingly do that for my job on a regular basis is very uncomfortable for me. So,
but
I'm not sure.
You make you make amazing content, and so there needs to be more people like you. You know, I don't want to watch sensationalized stuff. I don't want people saying, "Hey, look at me." And I used to be that guy, and I think I'm a little different now. I'm a little bit more calm. But yeah,
more people. I thought like of you, something Bob. Funny. This career is like magnet fishing. You literally throw a video in the lake and drag it across the bottom. And whoever's interested is interested. Occasionally you pick up like an old rusty nail. You got to pick it off and throw it back in the ocean. But that's basically what this is. We're magnet fishing with our ideas.
We all need to just consult with Drew Witt before making any video. He's really good at what he does.
He is very good at it.
He needs to start a thumbnail firm.
Yeah.
Any other thoughts on this? Sorry to add another ramble to the end of the show.
I hate talking about behind the scenes YouTube stuff, especially for like a whole episode. But like it's so much of what I do. It's so much of what I think about every single day. It's hard not to talk about it.
Yeah. I think people understand. We try to not talk about it every episode, but it is going to come up. Cool. Well, I want to thank our Patreon supporters for giving us the opportunity to talk about this stuff and other stuff on a regular basis. We are really grateful for everybody over there, especially our top supporters. They do more than they need to do, but we're really grateful for that extra effort and support. That is Works by Solo, The New Janky Workshop, Scott at Dad It Yourself DIY, Rich at Low End Design, Pete Rondo, Odin Leather Goods, Nick Ryan, Chris McCormick, Chad from Mancrafting, Albers Woodworks, and A Pretty Big Deal, Inc. But also, people like Paul Siriani. Thanks, Paul, for the support. Paul's been supporting for about 2 years now. And there's a lot of people that support us, you know, for $1 an episode or whatever. And that's amazing that we really appreciate every single bit of support. And everybody at every level gets the after show, which is a separate podcast from this one. It's just continued conversation. There's usually future stuff and secret stuff and whatever stuff.
I need help making a decision and we'll discuss it in the after show.
Oh, cool. Well, I have car drama to tell you about.
All right. Oh, all right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be in the after show. It's not. Anyway, if you want to get the after show, you go to patreon.com/makingit, sign up at any level, and then you get a link there up in the top right that you can add to your podcast player. You can listen to it directly on Patreon as well. You get links to the video show. So go over and help us out. Support the show if you like what we do. And if you don't want to support the show, tell somebody that you think would like the show about the show. That is also awesome. Because the more people that listen, the more people are kind of a part of the group of the community, the people that, you know, that listen and know each other and all that. It's a really cool group of people. So you can expand that just by telling somebody about the show. All right. Do you guys have anything to recommend? I do not. I have nothing of note that
I just looked through my, I watch a lot of Professor Dave Explains. I talked about him a couple of weeks ago. He does these debunking videos with flat earthers and, his most recent one is about the guys that don't believe the lunar landing was real. And he's extremely smart. He's really he's a college teacher. And it comes to chemistry and history. He's extremely smart. And every other video is just a general lesson. Like, actually, he just posted a few minutes ago, Latin vocabulary, and he talks about Latin vocabulary. So he goes through just real history lessons and real, very specific moments in space and time about lessons. And in between the fun stuff, he always says, he goes, my debunking videos get the most views, so I do them every couple of videos. And he's got a really snarky personality. He's very abrasive, and he's very curt, and he's my type of person. He really makes me laugh half the time. But Professor Dave explains. You'll enjoy it. But the good thing about it is when it jumps to another video and it's just a lesson and you don't get near your phone to switch it, it's always good. It's like, you notice how the scroll stuff lately, like we scroll and we just look at garbage. They're trying to get you onto these like new apps where you're scrolling, but you're learning lessons about American and world global history.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's kind of what his channel's like. Even when the debunking videos, he's dropping thousands of pearls of wisdom in between him smashing somebody who deserves it. So check out Professor Dave Explains.
Cool.
I got a good one. Bob, you're going to want to subscribe to this. This is called Root Kid, and unfortunately, he only has 4 videos. But they're basically, it's basically artwork, but with electronics. And they're bonkers. And he doesn't get into any how-to. It's just like, there's this thing that I want to make. I'm going to make it. It has custom PCB boards made for this stuff. They're ridiculously thought out as like thought pieces type things. And the videos are really short. I wish they were longer. This channel is going to have a million subscribers soon because they're just so cool.
Awesome. That sounds cool.
It's a good one. I watched all 4 videos the same night as soon as I discovered it.
I'm like, okay. Gotcha. Yeah,
this is good.
You get a lot of views too.
Yeah, his last one's close to 1 million views.
Wow. So I did watch a video the other day. I forgot about this one. And I didn't finish the video. So I don't know exactly how it ends. But it's by Jesper Makes, which I wasn't familiar with, although I feel like I should be. Yeah, maybe I was and don't recognize the name. Anyway, the video is called Why Woodworking YouTube Feels Different Now.
Yeah.
And it's him making something. It's an interesting one because it's him making something and then voicing over the video of making something, talking about an entirely different subject. He's talking about how YouTube woodworking has changed, why the video pace and coverage is different than it was. And he talks about it in like a 5-year span, which is really interesting. You know, from his perspective, that's a long time to be on YouTube doing woodworking stuff.
Well, working
and
on
from
15.
Our perspective, it's like we're a generation back from that. And I know there's people that are a generation back from us who have been doing it, like Mark, have been doing it for way longer. So, but it's interesting hearing somebody else's who's newer than us to it already seeing that change over their career about how things have had to change to be sustainable and everything. And so it's an interesting. You know, he says a lot of the things that I think we think or notice, but maybe don't ever, I don't get the time to actually think through and like, oh, that's why this is this way. Oh, this is, you know, that's why we do that. So go check that out. Anything else for the week? Cool. Well, thanks for hanging out with us, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll catch you next time.
Thank you. Love you.